The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Flory, Judge Brian, and Judge Werke, the Honorable James Flory presiding.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is State of Minnesota versus Henry Albert Allison Jr., court file 821-0650. I guess I'll note just initially, we're at least 10 minutes early here on the arguments, and we're ready to proceed. But if counsel either needs time or you're waiting for someone to join on, we'll give you that time here too. So either of you have a problem with proceeding early here?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you for that. Then our rules are the same, regardless of the fact that we're appearing by Zoom here today, which means that you each have 15 minutes for your principal arguments, and counsel for appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal if they wish to use that. We are recording the proceedings here today, and we'll make those recordings available to the public in our normal course of business. And so we would ask for your assistance in identifying yourselves for our record as you begin your arguments. So with that, we'll start. And counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Matthew Francis, Traverse County Attorney. I'm here on behalf of the appellant. So the court's aware, the court sees me looking off to my right during this presentation. I have another computer monitor with all my court files and everything over there. So that's what I'm looking at if you see that. So,
I have the same excuse, Mr. Franzi, because I've got two here too, and I'm often looking at the bigger one to my right. So we're in the same boat on that issue anyway.
Go ahead. Thank you, Your Honor. So the case today, I think, is a very simple one. It's whether or not Judge Glasserud erred as a matter of law when he issued a sentence to the defendant, Henry Allison. In this case, Mr. Allison was convicted of three offenses. He was convicted of second-degree criminal sexual conduct. He was convicted of use of a minor in a pornographic work. And he was convicted also of possession of child pornography. And at the sentencing, actually at the plea hearing, as noted in my brief, and then at the sentencing hearing, we noted that the first two counts were, actually all three counts were committed as separately as a matter of time and place.
All right, Mr. Franzi, I agree with you in terms of the issue and its simplicity, but, you know, we've all looked at the sentencing worksheets. I mean, did Judge Glasserud not have the sentencing worksheets available? How did that happen?
I don't know that, Your Honor. I, as the court notes in my brief, this when I cite to the transcript, and that's why there was two separate times where I asked.
I know I'm interrupting my own question. This is just a curiosity question. It has nothing to do at all with the facts or the outcome of this case. But when we went through the file, why is there a plea hearing and then an amended plea hearing, and they're identical but for the date? Is it just the date? Was it just a cover page that needed to be inserted?
I don't know the answer to that question.
That's just my personal curiosity. It was a lot of papers, and unfortunately, I hit print, and I chided myself for doing that. Anyway, back to my question then. Sure. You don't know if did you work off of the sentencing transcripts, the sentencing worksheets, when you were at the sentencing hearing?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. I mean, in a sense of, we all got them beforehand. We all review them. I know Judge Glasserud is always very meticulous when he goes, when he gets his plea, the PSIs and the worksheets. I think the issue here simply is Judge Glasserud is of the opinion, and I think it's made very clear in the transcript, that he was following the sentencing guidelines. In other words, the sentencing guidelines require that counts two, for purposes of oral argument, we'll just say we have three counts here, we'll just say counts two and three, that they had to be sentenced, if they're sentenced consecutively, because you go down to the zero criminal history score, that meant you then had to look at the criminal history grid or the sentencing guidelines grid and see where they fall. And since they fall within the shaded box when they're at a zero criminal history score, that he is then required as a matter of law to sentence them as a state execution, not as an executed sentence. And I believe
if the judge, and I do agree with you, I think he was very, very particularized going through the sentencing, trying to be very thorough. But, you know, my question is this, if we agree with you and the judge missed the provision that mandates that sentences be executed, if he was not aware that he had the discretion to support a mitigated departure, what happens when this, if we agree with you and this would go back? I mean, does he not get an opportunity to consider that issue?
Are you saying then, if this were to be remanded, would he then look and sentence consecutively with executed sentences on counts 2 and 3. Is that what you're asking, Your Honor?
No, I'm asking you if, in fact, they are consecutive and are to be executed, if the judge can consider, does this judge have any discretion to consider any mitigation, any departure from what the sentences would be according to the sentencing worksheets?
Well, I think if the court remands it, then for resentencing, I think he would have discretion if he found that there were mitigating circumstances. We didn't come to that issue here because there was not any, he thought himself that as a matter of law, he had no discretion but to stay execution on counts 2 and 3. So if this court remands it and for a new sentencing hearing, I believe then that all options would be back on the table with respect to whether a downward departure could be then argued for and received. I believe it was, there was a sentencing worksheet, or not worksheet, but a memo from the defense counsel on this asking for mitigation. But you know, sure, I believe that that would be on the table here, as it would be for anything else. Like I said, I believe that there was a second time I went and started asking him questions as shown in my memo or my brief during the sentencing hearings. I specifically went back to this issue of why are you doing, staying execution of this, and made sure the record was clearly developed that he's doing this because he thinks he has to as a matter of law, that he's just not simply exercising his discretion. I always have a policy that I think all three of you, Your Honors, were district court judges at one time. I always take the position that district court judges have discretion to sentence. You have discretion to do bail hearings and those things. I don't get crabby when somebody sentences differently. My job is to make recommendations, and the judge's job is to sentence. Here, the only reason why I'm appealing this is because I believe the judge really wanted and wants to sentence Mr. Allison to a longer period of time, but felt that as a matter of law, he couldn't. And therefore, that was the basis for my appeal, is to say, hey, you really can do this. And unless there was something that I'm completely off on, and Your Honors would know better than I, whether a judge does have the, that is the law, but I'm looking at everything, I look at the case law, it's very clear that these should have been executed sentences and not state execution, unless he made a record that there was mitigating factors that would justify a downward departure. And that's kind of what was the second half of my brief was about, was even if he were to do this, then these would be technically downward departures, and he needs to make a record of that, which he did not do. So I asked for all our argument because this was kind of the, I always want to know if the judges have a question, like your Judge Work, like you just had a question for me, and I don't want to take up everyone's time. If you feel like you guys have got this from my perspective and understand what my argument is, I have any more questions, I'll defer to defense counsel.
I'm seeing none from the panel here. Thank you, Mr. Franzi. You'll have an opportunity for rebuttal if you wish. Mr. McLaughlin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Michael McLaughlin from the State Public Defender's Office, and I'm representing Mr. Allison on this matter. Mr. Allison's in agreement with the state's position that a remand is necessary in this case, and that the guidelines do not support the district court's conclusion that it was required to impose these as stated sentences. But where we differ from the state a little bit is we feel that the scope of that remand hearing should be broader than what the state's position has said. Or when the courts...
Well, the state has indicated the scope of that remand could and should include the sentencing judge's ability to consider a departure. So what more would you want? I mean, that gives you your chance to re-argue your reason to have the sentence modified.
We appreciate that, Judge Workey, and appreciate the state saying that. We'd agree that the court would have that discretion if it found that these convictions supported permissive consecutive sentences. But the point that we make in our brief is that there's also a threshold determination the court has to make that these convictions are eligible for permissive consecutive sentencing. And that analysis is the court has to look at the defendant's criminal history score at the time of sentencing and determine that the sentences are presumptive commitment sentences.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, especially with my scratchy voice, but I don't know that that's on the table in front of us. Wasn't that previously determined that there was a late filing and we're not taking a look at that issue?
That was a different issue, Your Honor. The motion for cross appeal we filed dealt with whether these are part of this single behavioral incident. The argument is that before you get to the state's position that that the court erroneously imposed these permissive consecutive sentences as state sentences, there needs to be a threshold determination of whether they're valid permissive consecutives in the first place.
Mr. McLaughlin, before you give your argument as to why you think that the court didn't make the conclusions you wanted it to make, jumping off of Judge Werke's question, isn't there some similarities here because you didn't file a notice of cross appeal on the issue of the determination of the what you want the district court to now go back and address?
In our view, it's different than the cross appeal issue because a necessary legal premise of the court's ruling on the issue raised by the state regarding the permissive consecutive sentences is that the sentences qualify as permissive consecutive. So the state's argument depends on the court making a correct determination in the first place that these could be permissive consecutive sentences. So for that reason, we made the argument in our brief because it is encompassed by the state's argument. It's a necessary premise of the state's position that these are permissive consecutive sentences. So that's why we made the argument in our brief. I think everyone in this case was attempting to follow the guidelines. It's just the court wasn't looking at the right framework. And as Judge Werke stated, the court was careful in this case. I think what should happen is the court should follow the steps that the guidelines outline, where the first determination is whether each conviction is a presumptive commitment sentence. If that's the case, then they're eligible for permissive consecutive sentences. And then the judge can decide whether to impose permissive consecutive sentences at that point. But that chain of analysis didn't happen in this case. And we asked for a remand for the court to go back through the whole process, first determine whether based on the criminal history scores, these convictions can be imposed as permissive consecutive, and then decide whether or not to impose them as permissive consecutive. And just conduct that whole new analysis.
I don't see it raised anywhere, Mr. McLaughlin. Are you raising any claim or challenge that the sentencing worksheets as prepared in this matter that are part of the record and attached to one of your addendums are inaccurate?
No, but we don't make that specific claim, but I mean, the state still does have the burden. At sentencing, you prove criminal history score by the preponderance of the evidence. The court never evaluated whether those criminal history scores in the worksheets were correct for the use of a minor in a sexual performance and the possession of pornography charge. The court never evaluated whether those scores were correct and never evaluated whether those scores supported a presumptive commitment sentence.
But they were never challenged, and they're not even being challenged now or under a Rule 27 motion. It seems like there's no dispute between the parties or in this record that the three sentencing worksheets all indicated that all of these, based upon Mr. Allison's criminal history score, were all presumptively executed sentences. Under the guidelines, and that only if they're being sentenced consecutively do you go back to a zero for the period of time to be served. I don't see any challenge to the accuracy of anything in terms of those worksheets. So I don't know why that would be an issue that would be revisited when it's never been raised.
In response, I'd say that the criminal history score is an issue that is not waived if it's not raised at sentencing. It can be raised in appellate proceedings.
But it hasn't been.
Well, we raised it. I mean, Your Honor, in our brief, we raised that the court did not make that criminal history score determination.
regarding. It wasn't asked to, and it still hasn't been asked to. I'm having a hard time following your argument. I'm not trying to be rude here, but it just seems to me there's absolutely nothing in our record to suggest that, one, the court was asked to consider that, or that anyone has ever objected before the district court to that.
Well, Your Honor, for criminal history score to be presented and for the state to have its burden, it does not depend on the defense raising the issue. The state bears that burden to prove criminal history score by preponderance of the evidence. So the fact that it wasn't raised or litigated below doesn't affect that it's a necessary part of the court's analysis when determining whether these convictions are eligible for permissive consecutive sentences. And I'd also just say that the court's analysis that that the second two convictions were scored with a criminal history score of zero, and that they're therefore state sentences, that made any criminal history score issue irrelevant because the court was stating that the scores were zero. So at the time of sentencing, the defense didn't have any reason to raise the criminal history score issue because the court was analyzing it as if they had a criminal history score of zero. So I don't think there's really been a fair opportunity to litigate this issue below, and we would just ask that issue, along with the other issues the state raises, be part of the court's consideration on remand. We agree with the state fundamentally that this matter should be up to the district court to make its determination of what the appropriate sentence is, and we just ask that the remand instructions just clarify to the court that it should conduct the full analysis provided under the guidelines for determining whether permissive consecutive sentences were appropriate in this case.
All right. I
have nothing further.
All right. Thank you. I see no questions from the panel here. Thank you, Mr. McLaughlin. Mr. Franzi, any rebuttal?
Very briefly, Your Honor. First, Judge Werke, it's Werke or Work?
Sorry, I had to unmic. It's Werke pronouncing Werke. Thank you.
Your Honor, I did find an answer to the court's question earlier about with respect to the transcripts. The reason it was an artfully captioned amended plea hearing, but actually if the court looks at the two transcripts on the first page, the first one says that it was on October 20th, and the second one correctly reflects it was October 21st. That was the date of the plea hearing.
And as I said, I realized that after I printed the 100 some pages of both, but all right, that's just a printer thing.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the only thing I would just offer in rebuttal is, since it appears that the court's appears to be in agreement, obviously we'll know to get your order, but with respect to remanding this issue, I believe that the court with the part of the instructions would just be to remand it just only looking at the issue of whether or not counts 2 and 3 should be executed sentences or that they should be executed sentences unless the court were to find mitigating circumstances that would justify a downward departure and that those would not be executed, that we're not going to go back and relitigate the issues of whether these are properly separate issues, like the defense counsel indicated he was trying to do a cross appeal.
Yeah. So Mr. Franzi, is it Franzis or Franzi?
Francis, Your Honor.
Francis. Okay, let's get everybody's names pronounced correctly today. Francis, we do have case law about criminal history score and whose burden it is and what happens if the evidence is insufficient at the time of our appellate review. I think of this as the outlaw line of cases that remands for the defense, even when it's not objected to, will remand when the record is not sufficient to support a criminal history score that's only challenged on appeal, right? So we have a well-developed line of cases where we do that rather routinely. So why wouldn't we also consider, under the ability to challenge a criminal history score in that way, why wouldn't we also allow that challenge to occur on remand here?
Well, I would say number one, I am not, to be honest with the court, I am not knowledgeable, sufficiently knowledgeable to know about this, about the line of cases that Your Honor is referring to. So if that exists and that is allowable under the law, then by all means, let's do it. But I'm wondering if this, I'm only talking about issues that were raised on appeal that defense counsel doesn't get a second bite at the apple. If the court were to remand us, we have another sentencing hearing and we come back up here, basically relitigating an issue like, for example, whether or not the court properly found at the first plea hearing that these were separate incidents worthy of being sentenced consecutively. But with respect to the criminal history score, I think the record obviously supports that there was, Judge Flory already indicated, we did have the sentencing worksheets. It does show the criminal history score, and they are all very clearly indicative that he had at least 4 criminal history points. And for all 3 offenses, he would be eligible for an executed sentence. And so that would fall under the guidelines. But I think what I'm hearing defense counsel say, and it was my intention to do, is to make sure that the court said that on the record. So it's not just part of the record, but it's actually affirmatively stated on the record that that there's justification for that because of the criminal history score. And that's all I had. So thank you so much for your attention.
All right. Thank you. Thank you to both counsel here for your briefing and argument in the matter. We will take the matter under advisement at this